Welcome to the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series, where your host, Andy Jacob, interviews leading entrepreneurs, founders, and CEOs about their incredible companies and discusses their unique entrepreneurial journeys. If you're the CEO or founder of an exciting and exceptional company, the editorial team of .com Magazine welcomes you to pitch your business story to appear on this exciting interview series by reaching out to Mr. Jacob at .com Magazine at .commagazine.com. And without further ado, here is another amazing entrepreneurial story on the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series.
Hello, everyone. Andy Jacob here with the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series. Wow, I have a great show today. I have a gentleman that I call an entrepreneur's entrepreneur. His name is Mr. Brian Esposito, and he is the CEO and founder of Esposito Intellectual Enterprises, LLC. And let me tell you, when this gentleman came across my desk and I saw everything that he's involved with, all of the startups and all of the companies that he's been able to help, let alone form, I mean, he is a man that you really are going to want to listen to the entire interview. We're going to uncover and unpack it all. He has a holding company with over 75 entities in it. I mean, so many companies he's helped, so many companies he's formed, and so many companies he has helped along the path to greatness. It's just so good to have Brian on the show. Brian, you're a world-renowned leader in the field. Without further ado, let's get right to the interview. Brian, welcome to the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series today.
Thank you, Andy. Pleasure and honor to be here with you.
All right, let's go, because everybody's going to be saying to themselves, what's up with Brian Esposito? I mean, I've heard, maybe heard his name along the way. Jake's got him on the show. Let's pull the lens back.
Let's
do it. 30,000 feet to start the show, and tell us about Esposito Intellectual Enterprises to start with.
Absolutely. So I built this out of necessity. So everything I've done to this date was for my own need. And I had to figure out everything you could possibly think of when starting any company. Made every mistake you can think of. But now after 20 years, like you mentioned, I've built a holding company wholly owned by me at the top level. Proudly, there's over 75 different entities in it as of the end of last month, constantly looking to acquire, merge, or build new companies. That's a continuous process. And I've accumulated over 100 joint ventures from around the world and operating in over 25 different industries with a presence in over 25 different cities around the globe. And what I really find very rewarding with this chapter of my life is I take everything that I've done and I get to work with startups, even up to Fortune 500 companies, and create real value. I don't like unicorns. I like building real businesses that have sustainable earnings and are valued properly based off of those positive earnings. That's the world I like to build. I like to show companies, especially if they're startups, to be on a proper trajectory where you don't have to dilute yourself out of your own company. Making the right moves with the right relationships and right strategy, you can build a great business and not have to put it on pause when you run out of money. You know, the constant valuation trap in the startup world, and I'm not knocking it, that's just the way that it's always been done, is raise money at a valuation that you made up, you've dished off equity to your cousin, your lawyer, your uncle, and then you run out of money and you got to try to raise money again at another valuation that you made up. And at some point you do dilute yourself out of your own company. You find yourself working for your investors and all of that passion and drive is just completely ripped out of you. So I like to come in and help companies that I believe in, that have great management and interesting strategy, great product. And how can I come in over top? And I often say, like peanut butter and jelly, how can we create value? What can we look at what I have, match it with you have, and create an instant market or an instant new opportunity?
I love it, Brian. It's so interesting. Now let's get into it. Let's say I'm a startup founder. I've got a business. I heard about Brian Esposito, you know, whether it's online or, you know, I'm at a conference and somebody brings your name up in a conversation, or, you know, I'm doing a seminar and at a seminar and I see you on the, you know, on the panel. What does that first conversation sound like with the startup founders, Brian? What are some of the problems they have, and how do you come in and help solve the problem for them?
It's always capital. Right? The first thing I hear is they need money. They come to me and they want to raise money. And I said, that's fine. And the first question I ask them back, is it growth capital? Is it money that you need to fuel revenue? Because this time in our life, it's the best time to borrow money. I've never said that in my life, but the bank rates are so low. Governments are giving away basically free money. Now, imagine if you had revenue, you can go out and borrow as much as you need, not give up the equity, not have to put your business on pause. And normally it's pre-revenue, and they're trying to pitch me a song and a dance. And I said, just clear your jets. Let's put our guns on the table and let's look at what you got. Because if you need to raise money, and this is your second, third, or maybe fourth attempt at it, there's something wrong with your model. In my model, there's the whole earnings, pre-earnings, no earnings debate. We could be worth a lot more money with no revenue. I don't play in that world. In my model, I want to look at a company and say, how do you start making money? You need to start making money. You need to start rewarding yourself. And then you need to also make sure that you're paying your employees, you're paying your bills, your vendors. Like, you need to make money. So then the conversation leads to, what market are you trying to go after? What is your product? What is your technology? What is your piece of IP? And then the more I hear about them and the more they tell me about their story, my mind is spinning on all of our holdings and companies, and where can I put this and drop it in and create an instant opportunity? So the conversation takes a little bit of massaging on my part, where I have to walk them through, get off the pitch machine right now, and just tell me let's get your business in motion.
I love it, Brian. So let's talk about it. Let's peel it back a little bit. Of course, you're on location, you're outside, there's going to be birds chirping and dogs barking, but that's one of the things that's great about being an entrepreneur of your level is, you sit outside, you have a great interview with, me at .com magazine, and it's not a problem at all. As a matter of fact, I'm a big dog lover and I love birds as well. Now, Brian, let's talk about this just for a minute, okay? Because this is important. I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs and they have these great ideas and they're in the startup phase. And the first question a lot of people ask them is, well, tell us about your paying customers. And a lot of them don't have any paying customers. So there's some kind of disconnect between some startup founders who have this great technology, a great platform, something that they're thinking about, and having a paying customer. I would imagine paying customers are very important to talk about when you have this conversation, Brian, with your startup founder. So what does that conversation sound like?
Sure. Well, a lot of the startup founders, especially in the tech world, they're engineers, they're developers, they're creative. They're creative people, even in the music and arts world. They just want to create. And that's amazing. Then you have that founder that's a creator and also has the business side. And they're very hard to find. So I don't knock anybody that doesn't have the idea to know where to bring something that they built that was amazing. That's where I shine. Like, I could take what somebody's built that's been fantastically developed. It's this beautiful, well-packaged product, but they don't know where to go with it. And that's where it comes into, unfortunately, relationships, where you need to know the right people, have access to different markets, have access to different industries. And that's where I come in to help them create a business, take what they've built, and then push it forward into the market and help them and show them how to make money and also show them how to properly value what they've built and what that company should be worth.
I love it, Brian. One thing you mentioned that's so super interesting, and I would imagine, you need to really be able to think on your feet, and you have to be able to go deep into your holding company with all the entities and companies that you've helped. But one thing that I love that you said, Brian, is you have these conversations with the startup founders. And now automatically you're starting to think in your brain, how can you bring value? How can you sort of maybe connect that startup with one of your holding companies? How you can perhaps bring value by making a partnership with a company that you know, or a company that you own, or a company that you're an advisor with. So I would imagine that, you're a big believer in putting together entities to create additional value, more value than if they just are separate and sitting alone. So where do you get that sort of creative value mindset? Where did that come from in your career?
For me, a lot of people do one thing, they do it well. And then you have moments like a global pandemic. And if that one thing, there's no need in the market, then you're in for a problem. My mind always worked better with more. My first business was in the beauty industry in the late 90s. I built the first B2B, B2C e-commerce platform for beauty, launched over 1,200 brands. So I was, you know, as far as doing a lot of things at once, I'm dealing with buyers, manufacturers, retail stores, sales reps, our own technology. So my mind has been programmed and trained to deal with a lot. And it always worked better with more. And the way that I think and the way that I strategize is I just can see something that somebody has, and I never want to come in and make somebody feel bad about the path that they're on. I always want to be supportive to founders. I always want to protect founders because I'm a founder for all of my companies over the years. So I want to come in and be careful about, hey, that's great. But then I start connecting the dots, like you said. And if they have a product that they're going down one certain use case with, and that's the market that they're going after because somebody said that's a good idea, or maybe they know somebody in that space, I come in and be like, well, let's try to go this channel because there's a whole different position that this product can fulfill. There's a whole different audience that could use this product for a whole different reason. And that's because, you know, I'm on the ground with all of these companies. I work in the market. I travel all over the world. I'm hands-on. The reason I'm outside is because we're outside developing a new hotel concept. So there's like, I'm not in a glass ceiling room somewhere looking down on all this and pretending I have ideas. A lot of people like the sound of their voice and they like to just broadcast out information. When I say something about a product or a service or a solution or a piece of IP that this company has, I say it from a belief that there is a need for this because I hear it, I see it, and I can create value for that opportunity. And it's because I'm involved in so much. If I was only involved in one industry, anything else I say would just be a guess. I'd be making opinions of what if maybe it would work here. But you know, answer your question, because we're doing so much and it's constantly in motion. For example, something I'm talking to somebody about today about their product, I could have a conversation with somebody tomorrow that could be an instant fit and it's a whole different new idea. And that's the world and the ecosystem I created. Mind you, it was a mess perfecting and building. It took me I did it wrong for 16 years. Over the last 5 years, I really retuned and redefined it. And I think I perfected a model that's de-risked for time, resources, and money. And it puts my own companies or partner companies in a position to create value.
That's awesome, Brian. In the old days, we would call you a deal maker. In the old days, we might even call you a rainmaker. Now, Brian, for the startup founder watching this show, I want them not to pick up the phone and call you and just have a conversation with you without thinking it through about sort of what their needs and wants and desires are. Maybe they need to ask themselves some questions about their own company. So what are some of the questions that a founder should be asking themselves if they're having a tough time? Maybe they're not knocking the cover off the ball. What types of questions are the good questions they should ask themselves about their own company before calling you and discussing what you might be able to do with, you know, Esposito Intellectual Enterprises?
Yeah, I'm open to anybody reaching out to me. So anybody that does that, I think that takes a lot of strength. So I don't avoid any question. But if you want to come more prepared, if you have advisors on your company or your startup, and I think that's one of the key formulas to success, you should ask yourself, the advisors that you have, are they participating in your growth? Are they effective? Are they adding value? Because I'm going to come in and I'm going to rattle the cages if they're not. And I'm going to ask them, what is wrong with you? Your job as an advisor is to help this company succeed. Your job as an advisor is not just your name on the deck. It's your name and your reputation to ensure that this company has a chance to prosper. So something that I think is really important, and you know, a lot of founders maybe haven't hit that point where they're not afraid to say what they want to say. It's very important that you always speak your mind. This is your company. Your credit's on the line. Maybe your house is on the line. You know, you're probably not paying yourself, and that's something I also learned for 15 years. I thought being last to eat was a good thing, not a good thing. You got to reward yourself. You need to pay yourself, and as long as you're responsible with your money, being first E and taking care of everybody else is a good model. And then if there's an issue that happens where your company needs capital, or an opportunity where your company needs capital, and you're smart with your own earnings, you can become your own bank for your own company. And you don't have to go and try to raise money, or you don't have to go and try and borrow money. You borrow money from yourself. So I think a good question is, even if it's not advisors, the people and the support system that are around you, whether it's your employees, your family, peers, or any coworkers, are they the right people? Are they adding value? And if they're not, they got to go. You know, you can't try to teach somebody to add value. They either can or can't. And your time needs to be spent. You know, like I always try to tell people, be like the 1927 Yankees, be the best team, be Murderers Row, that's the type of team you want to build in your company. And that's the kind of support that you need as a founder.
I love it, Brian. It's so great. And of course, you not only work with, you know, startup companies, you work with huge companies as well, you know, Fortune 100, Fortune 1000 company. When we think about a huge company, we think about a, you know, billion-dollar company, market cap, $30, $60, $100 billion, Brian. What are the big problems that those kind of companies have? Is there one giant problem that you see these giant companies having across the board that, you know, you say to yourself, wow, you know, that's so fascinating because I would have never thought that they had that problem.
The biggest problem, and it's probably more contagious than COVID, is that that middle layer of management is so afraid to make any type of risk. They want to keep their job and they want to not rattle the cage. And that person or persons is a detriment to the progression of the company, because their job is to know what's happening in the market, what their clients are asking for, what their customers are asking for. And then they have to walk it up the ladder to get approval from senior management. Senior management is not going to be looking for or involved in what is actually happening in the market. You know, they're receiving all their data from the ground up and they're processing it. But you know, unfortunately, the biggest issue for startups or even smaller companies that want to work with these big companies, they're going to 9 out of 10 times hit a roadblock with some middle management that's just too afraid to push it up the ladder. And that's bad for innovation. That's bad for that big company. And it's a missed opportunity for a smaller company that may have something so small in their world, but it actually adds humongous value to a larger company. So if the company's public, then there's even a whole nother layer of compliance and legal and all these other types of processes that make it very difficult. But you know, thankfully, what's happened in the last 2 years is that companies that typically don't make decisions or not as innovative are being forced to. They're bringing on new technologies. They're opening up new funds to spur innovation. So, you know, the catch 22 from what the world has went through is that these big, legendary, Titanic-sized companies are making decisions that they would have otherwise not in the past.
Wow, that's so interesting. You know, the middle-level managers, they don't want to make big decisions or any decisions because they're just happy with the status quo. And what happens at that point in time is sort of the company doesn't get the sort of the spark that it needs because they're not being creative and taking risks to become a better company. That's so brilliant, Brian, really smart. And I love that so much. It's really interesting. Now, I know you've only set out a certain amount of time. You're working on some new hotel concept. I can't wait to hear about that. It's going to be super cool, I'm sure. And make sure you send me a couple tickets for my wife and I to come check the concept out.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's talk about entrepreneurship to close out the show. And again, thanks for slicing this time out today. For the younger entrepreneurs watching the show that are hitting a roadblock right now, tough time, you know, big wall, they can't get through it. They freeze in the frame. They freak out. They don't know what to do. They've never been through it. Maybe you could give some advice to those younger entrepreneurs that are hitting that roadblock right now to get through that roadblock.
Yeah. Unfortunately, even myself, when I work with these companies as an advisor, investor, or part of the management team, I have to take a step back and bite my tongue once in a while. So if you are facing that roadblock or that challenge or hurdle, you need to figure it out. You need to get through it. Someone to come in there and help you and get you through it quicker or faster or unscathed is not doing you any justice to become a seasoned entrepreneur or leader. Now, you need to get your bruises. It's part of the journey. The more you learn, the more you get beat up, the better off you are in the long term. And then you start to also find and realize strengths that you never knew you had or that you never knew you needed to use. So not to avoid your question, but you need to find comfort that everybody goes through it. Whether you have nothing or billions of dollars, there's always going to be problems. So there's nobody's immune to it. And the more that you experience and the more that you figure out and strategize on and get through, the better equipped you are to lead your company. Or if that company unfortunately disappears because of that hurdle, the better equipped you are to properly start the new company and do it with a whole different set of experiences underneath your belt.
I love it. I mean, for the entrepreneurs watching the show, rewind what Brian just said. I mean, that's a complete Harvard MBA right there. I mean, that's it. I mean, if you're not experiencing the problems, if you're not experiencing the challenges, you're just not pushing hard enough. And that's just the bottom line. And Brian knows that. And so many of the entrepreneurs watching the show realize that as they go through their journey. Brian, listen, this is remarkable. I'm so happy that I've had a chance to have you on the show. I'm going to invite you back. We're going to talk about the holding company. We're going to talk about the entities inside the holding company, because that's going to be just fascinating, sort of uncovering that part about what I'm going to call uncovering Brian Esposito's brain. Maybe that's going to be the name of the next show that we're going to do. Esposito Intellectual Enterprises. Wow. People can reach out to you directly. I know you're very, very nimble with regard to talking to people. You love helping people. You love bringing value. You love bringing this mentorship mindset that you have to companies. And of course, putting them on the path to realize the types of gains that can happen when they surround themselves with the types of people that can provide them with this very interesting, logical stepping stone process that you provide. So Brian, thank you so much for coming on the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series today. I'm going to have you back. Good luck with the new concept on the hotel right behind you. And again, this has been absolutely remarkable.
Thank you, Andy. I really appreciate it.